We have resisted the urge to refer to Tom Schulenburg as a homing pigeon, but obviously not entirely. Schulenburg got a bachelor's degree from Humboldt State University many years ago, and he's coming back to the region to speak at the annual banquet of the Redwood Region Audubon Society on February 29th. Tom Schulenburg is big on birds, as is the Audubon Society. Dr. Schulenburg is a researcher on neotropical birds at the prestigious Cornell University Laboratory of Ornithology in New York State at Cornell University. He joins us now to talk about his work, joined by Harriet Hill, a board member of the Redwood Region Audubon Society. Welcome, Harriet.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey, and we really appreciate you having us on.
Good to have you. And Tom Schulenburg, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
And so I'll give you a chance, Tom, to brag a bit about the Cornell Lab. How big a deal is it in the study of birds? Because it does seem to come up again and again.
It's a pretty big deal. It's increasingly a big deal. The lab was founded very informally about 100 years ago by a college professor here at Cornell, Arthur Allen. He himself was an ornithologist at a time when there were very few professional ornithologists in the world. And he just hung a sign outside his door that said Lab of Ornithology. And, you know, that was it for the next 40 years. But he attracted a lot of very talented students, a lot of the best ornithologists of the 20th century in North America passed through his lab. And eventually he acquired the funds to establish a quasi-independent center for the study of birds at Cornell. We're actually located not on the main campus, but a few miles outside of town, on the edge of a very splendid little pond with beavers, muskrats, and mink, surrounded by woods. And so he built up this small little enterprise that he called the Lab of Ornithology, which focused not just on the study of birds, but on education about birds. Allen himself was a frequent contributor to National Geographic when that was one of the main venues for popular writing.
And Tom, what do you do at the Cornell Lab?
I manage several different websites. The lab has a variety of educational products, different websites, each of which is geared towards a slightly different audience, from very beginning birders to help them get started or answer basic questions about birds they see at their feeders, all the way up to cutting edge research on birds and bird biology. So as part of that mix, we have some websites that are trying to put out comprehensive, complete natural history profiles of all the birds of the world. Historically, we've had a focus on birds of North and South America, but we're about to expand to a truly global reach. So my job is compiling everything that's known about every species of bird in the world and putting it out on the website, nothing to it.
Yeah, right. Not too much involved there. Tom Schulenburg, certainly an obvious choice for a speaker for the annual banquet of the Redwood Region Audubon Society. Harriet, did his connection to Humboldt State lead you to seek him out?
Yes, actually. One of our board members, Gary Friedrichsen, was an undergraduate with Dr. Schulenburg and said he's not only a fabulous birder, but he's doing these great things now at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. So I think it was through that connection with Gary that we were able to recruit him for our little banquet down here in Humboldt County.
Which, let's mention this now. It's February 29th, and where and what time?
Yeah, it's going to be, like you say, Saturday, February 29th from 5:30 to 9 p.m. It will be held at the D Street Neighborhood Center on 13th and D Streets in Arcata. Social hour begins at 5:30, and dinner will be at 6:30. We will end our silent auction around 7, followed by the presentation of Dr. Tom Schulenburg. So to make reservations, you can see rras.org for details, or you can email gary@jacobycreek.net. And Jacoby Creek is all one word, spelled J-A-C-O-B-Y-C-R-E-E-K. Or you can call 707 496-6581. And the cost is $35 a person if you reserve by this Saturday, February 22nd. But on February 23rd, the price increases from $35 to $50. So get your reservations in. And the last day to make your reservations are on Thursday, February 27th.
Okay. Easiest place to get there, obviously, is RRAS, Redwood Region Audubon Society.org. Now, the history of the Society overall, very interesting, founded in the late 19th century to stop the killing of birds en masse for hats. The Humboldt chapter is a bit newer, though, I understand, only about, 50-plus years?
Yeah, actually, our last year was our 50th anniversary, and so we were founded in 1969 by a group of local conservationists who were very concerned about a proposed Samoa-Eureka bridge alignment that was supposed to pass directly through a large heron nesting colony on Tulawat, now known or formerly known as Indian Island. So that chapter, that new little chapter, succeeded in getting the bridge rerouted to avoid this nesting area. So it's great because you can still see dozens of nesting herons and egrets each spring when you cross the bridge.
Wow. So Tom Schulenburg and Harriet Hill are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Were you a member of the Audubon chapter there when you attended Humboldt State?
I was. Mm-hmm. In fact, I attended almost every monthly meeting during the part of the year when school was in session. And in fact, a friend and I were regular contributors to a column on local bird sightings for the Sandpiper, which is the newsletter of the Redwood Region Audubon Society. And it's still being published. I don't think anyone publishes a column like ours anymore, but the Sandpiper, I know, still is alive as the newsletter of that Audubon Society.
All right, so the bird die was already cast by the time you were at Humboldt State. It wasn't like you went on to birds after that. You were already well into birds by that time.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a birth defect. I started very early and never let go.
So how far and wide have you traveled in search of birds, Tom?
Well, pretty much anytime I'm awake and my eyes are open, I'm looking at or thinking about birds. But specifically, traveling for birds, I've been throughout a lot of South America, Madagascar, six or eight times I've been to Madagascar doing research there. I've visited other parts of Africa as well. I've visited Vietnam and Europe. But saw lots of birds there. But those were family vacations, which is a different kind of story.
Over the process of a career that stretches across parts of five decades, I would guess. What have you noticed about changes in birds and bird populations? What are the things that most concern people in your line of work?
There are just so many aspects to that question. One thing I could point you to is you may have heard just a few weeks ago, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology released a major study that documented massive declines in bird populations in North America over the last 40 years. The data for this came from two main sources, breeding bird surveys, which is a program administered by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. But also a check on that came from radar data. Many people don't realize that radar can pick up migrating birds. Actually, there have been some reports in the media recently about radar picking up huge clouds of flying insects.
Oh, sure, the locusts, yeah.
Right, but birds also, a lot of them migrate at night. Radar picks them up, and people have been using that for a long time to study bird migration. Anyway, the long and the short of it is there's about 25% fewer individual birds in North America now than there were several decades ago. And it's not monotonic. It's not that everything is decreasing. but, you know, some species actually are even showing some increases. But the net loss of 20 or 25% of our continent's birds is sort of worrisome. On the other hand, you know, so that scares us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on the other hand, traveling through South America or Madagascar, I've been part of teams that had, you know, the exciting pleasure of rediscovering, you know, birds who were thought to be extinct, or finding them new populations in places, you know, hundreds of miles from where they were supposed to be. So, you know, there's some bright spots too. It's not all doom and gloom, but definitely mixed messages there.
Mm-hmm. Definitely some mixed news there. We're talking to Tom Schulenberg, a researcher with the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. He's coming back to Humboldt State University neighborhood to speak at the Audubon Banquet on February 29th. Harriet Hill is with us from the Redwood Region Audubon Society. Questions, comments about birds, welcome here on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Harriet, what do you notice within your chapter, the Audubon Society, and bird trends in Humboldt Bay?
Well, you know, we just sponsored a couple years ago a shorebird census in Humboldt Bay to help it get designated as a site within the Western Hemisphere Shorebird Reserve Network. And at the time, they expected to find half as many birds as the shorebird census actually found. So that was quite exciting. And getting inclusion of Humboldt Bay in this network recognizes it as a site of major importance to the hemisphere for wintering shorebirds, and you know, it also provides other conservation funding opportunities. So that was kind of cool to learn about that. We're doing a lot of educational stuff, just like Cornell does. Over the last year, we've initiated a local campaign to create bird-friendly yards and communities. And last summer, we held a local bird-friendly garden tour that showcased gardens that were full of native plants, which are, of course, produce a lot of really good insect food for native birds. And then this spring, we're going to be sponsoring a CATIO, which is short for Cat Patio Tour, to show people who have cats how to create a fun, enclosed outdoor space for their kitties. And that's really good for the cats, then, who won't be hit by cars or exposed to diseases and fights and that kind of thing. They can go out and enjoy the air and listen to the sounds and watch the birds. And it's also a lot better for birds and other wildlife. So that's just some of the stuff we've been doing the last few years. We do a lot of conservation advocacy as well as educational opportunities, and we sponsor over 100 free field trips led by local birders each year and many other events. So we're pretty active, and we'd love to get people involved. If they want to join or learn more about us, they can go to rras.org.
Okay, and I want to come back to Tom to ask him. Now, a lot of your focus apparently on neotropical birds. What differentiates a neotropical from a tropical bird?
Well, neotropical refers specifically to the tropics in the New World. That's the neo part. So Central and South America and the Caribbean. Obviously, tropical birds, you know, around the world, you know, face a lot of the same problems with deforestation and so forth. But tropics, partly because they're closer and easier to get to, but also the neotropics are literally the center of bird diversity in the world. There's much greater diversity of birds in Amazonia than there is in, say, the Congo Basin, even though they're, you know, at the same latitude and are very impressive birdy places by any standard. But South America always comes out on top, so we go for the home team.
It seems like, you know, as you mentioned, pretty much any time you're awake, you're out looking at or for birds. I mean, is there one place in all your travels that you have wanted to go back to again and again because what you saw there was just so interesting?
Well, almost everything, almost every place, this is what happens when you get to be my age. You know, you always think, you know, if only I knew then what I know now. And that's not just about birds, it's about all aspects of life. But yeah, there's so many places I would love to go back to, you know, remote places that we, you know, had to hike a day to get to. But some of those places, unfortunately, don't even exist anymore. We have gone back to some of our old sites, and they have been deforested. They have been cut down, and now it's a pasture or coffee farm or whatever. The flip side of that is the world is it's a big, big place, and I'm always thinking about what's over the next ridge, what's in that next valley. I want to keep exploring and keep on going to new places as long as I can.
Well, for some reason, the phone lines are lighting up here, so let's take some calls. Let's start with Jeff in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Tom Schulenburg and Harriet Hill. Oops, did we miss him? Jeff in Medford, you there? Maddie, is his pot up? Jeff in Medford, we'll try it again. There you are. Okay, there we go.
Good morning. Yeah, first of all, I want to say I went to Humboldt State College back when I went to it in the 60s, and I just love the wildlife and the bay and the area around there. But what I wanted to comment was I've noticed over many years in this area that in the spring, there's little green worms or caterpillars that come out of the oak trees. They hang on a spread from the oak trees, and when I see those, I know I'm going to start seeing the tanagers, buntings, and bycatchers, and the neotropicals that show up. I mean, it's a correlation that's almost to the day, and I found that very interesting. That's my comment.
Okay. Is there a question, too?
Oh, I'm not really a question. Oh, another comment was the amazing, not neotropicals, the amazing amount of robins that showed up because we had a very big crop of madrone berries this year, and a lot of people commented about how many robins there were. There were literally probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions, flying through here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for those comments. Appreciate that, Jeff. Any thoughts from you, Tom Schulenburg?
Yeah, well, those are good points. A lot of birds do migrate. They have regular seasonal migrations, and these are closely tied to finding food. You know, insect-eating birds have much less to feed on in the northern winter, so they move south, and they come back in the spring when the leaves are out and insects emerge. It's a tight little system. What we're worried about now with climate change is that these systems could become decoupled, because insects can respond to changes in temperature much more rapidly than birds can. And so a big fear is that birds will return north in the spring, and they'll find that actually the big pulse of insects has already happened, and then they'll have fewer caterpillars and whatnot to feed their young. Not yet a crisis. And we hope it doesn't become one, but we're very, very interested in monitoring these kinds of connections going forward to see just what happens.
Okay. More talk about birds here with Tom Schulenburg from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology and Harriet Hill from the Redwood Region Audubon Society, bringing him in for their banquet on the 29th of February. Here's a call from Ryan and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, hi. This is always great conversation. Thank you. I'm really intrigued by the web-based learning opportunities for kiddos and school children, but also in particularly the adult participation through the emerging citizen science tools. And I know that you're a web person, and I'd love to hear more about those kinds of things.
Okay, thanks for that, Ryan. Appreciate it. Tom, what do you got?
Yeah, everything now is about outreach through the web. In terms of citizen science, the main program at the lab is something called eBird, which is a website that's also an app, free app you can download for your phone, which collects bird sightings from all observers from all around the world, and then by now, the lab has a database of several hundred million bird observations, which is a lot of data on where birds are at, throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a team of scientists who are busy cranking out research on those, including these studies on bird population trends. I want to point out another free app from the lab called Merlin, M-E-R-L-I-N, which is a bird identification app. It's especially geared towards people who are beginning birders, but you know, I use it a lot myself. It's a wonderful tool. It has several ways of working. One is if you see a bird and you're not sure what it is, you can play not 20 questions, you play 5 questions. You answer a few basic questions about what size it was and what color it was. And based on knowing where you are from the GPS unit in your phone, it gives you a lot of options on what it thinks you saw. And it's amazingly accurate. The other thing, you photograph the bird and run it through Merlin, and it's just, again, stupendously accurate in generating a good idea of what it was you saw from even a pretty crummy photo. It can often identify exactly what you saw. So those are two things to focus on, eBird and Merlin.
Merlin like the wizard. Okay, that's clear. I'm just taking a look at it right now. It looks like a fairly comprehensive app. Merlin.allaboutbirds.org if you want to look for it through the traditional website. Almost out of time here. We had a question about geese migration. Do all geese migrate or do some stick around?
Well, Harry could speak locally, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, all geese migrated, but we've made the world a better place for geese in many ways. So a lot of them do not migrate anymore. They're happy to feed on hopefully resalable to them now that weren't before.
Okay, we have to close it off there. We're out of time here. Tom Schulenberg is a researcher with the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. He'll be the speaker at the Redwood Region Audubon Society banquet on February 29th at 5:30 at the D Street Neighborhood Center in Arcata. Thanks to Harriet Hill, board member of the Redwood Region Audubon Society, for joining us and arranging the interview. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
All right, take care.